Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning, everyone. Nona here. I'm here with our guest, Florina Nigley, today. And we wanted to cover the topic today of finding your unique spiritual path and do that through Florina's story. You might know Florina here locally in Southern Humboldt through the mindfulness that she offers the community. She offers meditation classes. She goes into schools. And she's really active also in teaching Qigong. And a little bit of background. She also does massage, and that's the other aspect of her practice. Javi, are you hearing me? Just making sure here. We have some the light indications not on for us. So in any case, it's good to be here with you, everyone, this morning. Florina, it's good to have you.
Thank you, Nona. Good to be here.
Good to be here with you. You know, and Florina and Javi and I have been friends for a while now through our study with Dr. Young as well. I'm sure that'll get weaved through your story of how you've come to become a teacher of various practices. She's from Switzerland. I think a lot of you hear her often here on The Mud. She has her monthly Mindful Mud show. Is that on a Sunday?
That's the second Sunday.
Second Sunday, yeah, in the
spiritual
afternoon.
Spiritual perspective. No, we changed it now. It's in the morning now. It's in the same slot. Yeah, so we'll be back on in 2 weeks.
Okay, fantastic. Okay. And then we have interweaving for you also of an understanding of the physical body as being connected and one with our spiritual path as well. And so a large part of your background, you started in naturopathy in Switzerland in the 90s with your studies there. And then she expanded out into shiatsu, herbal medicine, and then Zen training. She specializes in lymphatic drainage. And then we met right here in Salmon Creek at the YMAA Retreat Center, where Dr. Yang Jingming taught Tai Chi and Qigong meditation. And you've got your Zen certification as well by a teacher that you have, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and a question that came up for me as we were preparing for this show as well. So welcome, and would you be willing to tell us a little bit about your journey and where you started off?
Where did I start off? Yeah, it's been a journey. It's interesting to kind of think about that. So I think my journey started, you know, being born with quite a few physical challenges. And as a kid, I never really thought myself as sick. It's kind of interesting to look back. But knowing, you know, talking, my sister just came visit a little bit ago, and she was so funny. She's like, yeah, you were always sick. So it's funny. I never saw myself as that. But obviously I was, like, you know, again, born with some physical challenges on the spine and lungs and other things. So always kind of on the brink of dying for a lot of times. And obviously that must have done something to me, right? but always that really intense life force in me at the same time. Very connected as a kid to nature and the divine, always looking for that connection and that, I think now looking back even to that, like, nurturing for my body, because I was in a physical way so weak, you know, probably, you know, how can I nurture myself with other things or from other sources? Mm-hmm. So then, you know, I had it all in my head, figured out, what I wanted to become and who I'm going to be and all of that, you know, as you do as a young person, probably. And somehow I lost connection to who I was, who I really was. And this inner force was like, nuh-uh, we're not doing that. Like, nuh-uh, you're not on the right path. So, and then with 18, I had a full stop, physical, mental, complete breakdown. And the symptom of it was showing as anorexia. But really what it was just, again, that full stop of like, you're not going like this. This is not your path. And obviously I wasn't aware at all at that time that that was what was going on. I was just like lost. I was really lost, I guess that's the right word. And so I was between life and death for quite a while. And it's an interesting time because it was when I was 18, right before my what would be equivalent to a high school diploma. And I was like, you can imagine like a young woman who was on top of her game, thought I was, very active in the community, very much in leader positions everywhere, and just full force going on. And so my whole community around me didn't understand what's going on with me. Suddenly, like, she's not eating. She's just skin and bones, and she's almost dying. And I was not really in my body anymore. And so I had to stop everything I was doing. And I fell into this place between worlds. Again, very interesting thing to talk about, really, because there's not much language for this place. But I was not in my physical body anymore. And I was just in this energetic field, seeing and feeling completely different things. So basically, it was almost like my nervous system wasn't really 100% there anymore, as we know it as a nervous system that's regulating, that's, you know, blocking certain things, right? So all my senses were open, and I was out there for quite a while. And difficult time, especially because I couldn't communicate. I wasn't looking at anything anymore. My senses were shut down in those ways, but other senses were opened up. So really kind of probably what comes closest to explaining the state is kind of a shamanic journey, you know, where you go into places. And at this time, physically, my mom was bottle feeding me, literally. And somehow I was kind of like, for me, that place was halfway conscious, halfway not, different conscious, I guess. And the question was this, do I want to live or not? Mm-hmm. Is this place for me or not, right? Mm-hmm. That was kind of like my quest almost. And I just remember one of my first real active physical decisions I made is I was picking up a book that was next to the coffee table that I was laying down. And it was Simple Zen by Yoko Beck. And in German, because I was in Switzerland. And Yoko Beck was a Zen teacher down in LA. And somehow that book was right there. Don't ask me how. And I somehow picked it up and I read the first page. And that was the moment for me of like, oh, wait, there is a way. There is a different way to be in this world. Mm. And that gave me that, okay, I'm going to give this another shot, from a completely different perspective. Yeah.
I love hearing this story kind of summarized because I've gotten different pieces from you as we've had our relationship together. But I want to slow it down just a little bit for the audience because you've said a few things there that I think that we can tease out. And the first thing, I know a little bit more about the challenges that you were born with, that you didn't actually have a lobe of your lung, and then also that you had this mobility challenge as well, where you weren't actually walking for a chunk of your early life. Can you explain that a little bit more too, just so we get a picture of what you were looking
again
at?
It's so interesting because looking back, I would describe myself as a very healthy, vibrant young child.
That's how you felt about
that's
yourself.
How I totally felt. Mm-hmm. And the reality from outside wasn't like that, I guess. So I was born, yes, with we have two big lobes, but we actually have five lobes of the lung. So I was born with two of those lobes missing. And And so lots of just breathing challenges through my childhood, lots of colds, lots of asthma, lots of allergies, lots of all of that. And I actually didn't really find out about this until about, I would say, 12 years ago or so, mm-hmm. when I just had chronic pneumonias. And so finally I got some different diagnoses, and then finally I found actually out what's really going on. Wow. But again, you know, I was never complaining. I just remember, you know, running as a middle and high school, you know, as you go for runs and stuff in PE, I always was at the back, and I was never understanding why, you know, I was trying to keep up with everybody, and I never complain. And I would like have blood in my mouth almost, like, you know, I was giving it all. And I always thought pain is normal, you know, suffering is normal. That's just part of what everybody goes through. I never questioned, oh, wait, something is different. So I never had that outlook of, I'm sick. I never saw myself like that ever. And so it was interesting just to not like feel that way. And then later, I was born also with some spinal, how would you call this in English? I guess a deformation, you can call it, in my lumbar spine. And so actually that was a big, big concern growing up, especially because doctors were very worried that my spine would snap in half because it's such an intense kind of disformed of my lumbar back. And so they were like, you can't do PE, you can't jump, you can never do this and do that. And fortunately, I was stubborn. People who know me, they know I'm still stubborn. But that kind of saved me because I kept doing everything I needed to do because I needed to have a strong back. I needed to have my muscles keeping my back up, right? So I'm really glad I was not doing any of these things. So yeah, so that was part of growing up. And then as a, when was that? In kindergarten, I was five and a half. I had something that's called morbus pertes. And that is when you're literally the ball of your hip bone disappears. And that can happen. It's not very often, I think, in children, but it can happen in children. It's when that little ligament that nurtures that bone kind of clogs. And so the bone doesn't get nurtured. And again, I was like not complaining, didn't think anything was wrong. I was just limping around and hopping around. And finally, somebody was like, she's not walking right. But it took like three times going to the doctors until they finally, on the x-ray, saw, oh wait, the very obvious thing is missing. Because, you know, it's kind of funny with the vision, right? If you don't expect something, you're not going to see it, right? So anyway, so they realized that and they basically said, I need to get in a hospital for a year and a half. And that would have literally been my death because fortunately I have incredible parents who were like, no, we're not doing that. She's not going to lay down for, imagine five and a half and you're laying down until you're seven. I mean, your body must be deteriorating by then. So I was fortunate. I was staying home and I was going to kindergarten. I was doing everything regular in my view. Mm-hmm. It looked a little different because I couldn't put any weight on that leg. But I was moving around different ways with my arms and had all kinds of different contraptions to do that. And I felt like I was a normal kid. Yeah. So that was another phase, and that healed perfectly a year and a half. But the problem there was that that coming out of that, I couldn't, again, as you know, not walking on that leg for a year and a half in your major growing period. That leg is quite a bit shorter. Obviously, the muscles were, you know, dissipated. So I needed to learn how to walk again. And I didn't get the right support. So my whole foot collapsed on that side. That whole arch and everything collapsed. And that's actually one of those things that gave me later some of the biggest grievance, because that joint is highly arthritic. And, you know, with 18, that's basically one of the things from 16 on. I could barely walk on that foot because it was just so, you know, it was mush, basically. So there were some things of that. And, yeah, so those are kind of the major parts that I can think right now. Yeah. Again, I think that the interesting thing here, it's just looking back, I had and still have these physical challenges, but I don't feel like I have physical challenges. I mean, I feel like I have physical challenges, but they're not limiting me, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the self-perception that you show and your vision of yourself, that's, you know, adds to the spirit side of things, right? Which was what we're going to get into. But I want to then touch on something you said about losing yourself then into going into the high school years. And at the end, I think you've talked about being really driven, continuing to be driven. Of course, that started when you were really young, and that same drive was continuing through your high school years. But at what point did it become an asset to have that drive and that stubbornness and that go, go, go? And at what point did it become like a loss of self? Because what does that really mean when you say that? And what do you attribute that to?
You know, I don't think I really know. I think it was just a normal, I don't know if normal is the right word. It was just one of those things. I wanted to fit in. I wanted mm-hmm. to be like everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, not wanting to be special. And just trying to do what everybody else is doing, you know? And I never, yeah. And in a way of like, I was always very much myself. Like, I never really cared what other people, you know, how they dressed or what they did. I always had that very intense, my ownness. Like, I wasn't feeling like I needed to compare or do anything. I was feeling very much myself. But I think just at that time, I didn't really know that I had a choice. Like that spiritual aspect, that living from the source that I always, I think, did in a way. But somehow that got lost in the shuffle of, okay, education, getting a job, building a family, right? That kind of thing. And it wasn't a conscious, I need to like put this away or can't show this. It was completely unconscious, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's like all the normal societal goals came in and they became the main focus. And along that line, you know, basically you just weren't focused on the things that would ultimately feed you.
I think that's
down
it.
The line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Mm-hmm. Because again, I had to feed myself from other sources my mm-hmm. whole life. Mm-hmm. And somehow that got lost. I think that's about, yeah, that's a good way to put that.
Fantastic. Well, you've got attuned to KMED. You're listening to Spiritual Perspectives, Buddhist Perspectives, the odd fifth Sunday of the month. And we're sitting down with our guest, Florina Nigley, who is a local practitioner. You'll find her on KMED for Buddhist Mindful Med. And we just talked about her journey of realizing the lostness. And now let's talk about how you came out of that. The first one was the reading of the Zen passage.
Yeah, so realizing that there is, even in the same world that, you know, I didn't need to change the world, but like there can be a different connection to the same world that we live in. I think that was kind of that realization of, oh yeah, I can just live from that place without having to change the outer world at all. The outer world changes because of my inner perspective. Mm-hmm. So, and that gave me that almost like just a new willingness, I guess, of I'm going to give this a shot, you know, which then meant for me, okay, I need to take care of this body. right? That was really dying, right? I was very close to organ failure many times. And so then from then on, I really dove into this beginner's mind. You know, I kind of mentioned with that not being able to walk on that one leg for a year and a half. That was already my second time of learning how to walk. And then I had a third time to learn how to walk again, but not just to walk, but also to talk and how to be with the world, to be with other people. Because my nervous system, as I said, was shut down. I could not be around other people because, you know, I could only tolerate the vibration of my mom in the room. Everything else was too much. No music, no other people. Because, again, I was so open that there was no boundaries. So I had to really gain that nervous system back, you know, really conditioning it back. And I remember it was like probably a good year of just being completely in that beginner's mind, of learning things brand new. It's like a baby, really, just as a young adult. And that gave me, in a way, a big fulfilling, realizing, oh, just folding laundry. What a joy. Literally, right? The texture, or preparing vegetables from the garden. Like, what a joy. What a deep fulfillment, right? Right there. So I had these very deep experiences that gave me that nurturing that I needed to nurture the willingness to be in this world as it is. I think that's really what it was. And then from there came the curiosity of, okay, one big part here, and that was really blowing me out of the socks, was that, you know, after a while of coming back into this world, I suddenly realized all my pain was gone. Like, literally gone. My, as I said, highly arthritic foot, no pain. I could walk again, no pain. My back, that was constantly spasming and really giving me a lot of grief. No back pain. Like, it was, and I was literally just kind of realizing that one day, right, that I was pain-free. And just as a reminder, right, and that is still kind of my practice now. When there's a pain or when there's an unbalance in my life, I will have some of these old pains back. They will be right there saying, hey, you're not in alignment, right? So again, my x-ray is not different, right? My physical diagnosis is not different. However, my pain is pretty much gone. And, you know, there are different practices, obviously, that I keep going to keep the pain at bay. But that was for me a big wakening up. Also, like, wow, this is incredible. This stuff is really incredible. Like, aligning yourself to life force.
So for someone who's not so connected with that understanding of pain leaving because of alignment, how would you attribute that phenomenon in a way that's more tangible and not so etheric?
Not so woo-woo.
I know my partner Javi loves that word, so step into the woo, he says. But really, like,
yeah, it's a really good question, Nona. You know, I think the easiest way to put this in words is probably that pain, the body gives us pain not to torture us. The body shows us pain to help us out, to talk to us, right? To say, hey, I need something, right? Hey, I, you know, there's a need that's not met. Can you help me out? This is my attention little thing, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's big. And a lot of that need is a spiritual need, is a need of really showing up for ourselves. You know, that might sound weird too, but that's really my experience, right? Sometimes it's as simple as I need more sleep, or I need to drink more water, or, you know, eat better food. Absolutely. That is absolutely reality. And then there's also, depending on what that pain is, chronic, there's an underlying need that is communicated not just from the physical. And the longer I go down this journey, the physical and the mental and the spiritual, they're really one. There is no difference here. But just to kind of take it apart, right, for our mind to understand, it's that listening is so important when there is pain. And really tuning in to, okay, what do I actually need? For me, that is really where it's at when it comes to pain. Because again, even with very intense, and there is a lot of physical research and evidence of that, that people with very intense, let's say, you know, I'm not alone with that, with let's say, perhaps an x-ray shows an intense deterioration of a joint, but people live without pain. It's possible, right? And again, that has physical and other aspects to it. So I don't know if that answers the question.
I think that's, you know, when you go back to the fact that, you know, sometimes it just takes a drink of water or more sleep or feeding ourselves the right nutrients. And it just brings up for me that we live in a society that does not encourage us to be in touch with those signals, and also that we are out of practice of, you know, understanding ourselves and our own the signals that are happening and how to address those signals and intense feelings. And, you know, I've been having some things come up for myself, and I'm just so grateful I have practices that I can use to address these things. But, you know, starting in the mindscape, though, because as soon as I have an intense feeling, you know, say right now it's in my arm, my brain goes, oh my goodness, you are broken, panic. You know, the first response of the brain is to just, you know, try to figure out what it is, but it doesn't have enough understanding to really know. And there's a panic that happens and a devastation. And you're just, this is like the world has stopped if you continue to pay attention to it. And then the other thing I notice is that my breath halts. Like I brace for that intensity. And I try to like, there's like a tension that happens in the mindscape too, to try to like, not engage because it's so intense. But I have to use all of my meditative practices and all of my awareness, attention, qigong practices to calm the mind down, to bring it back off that cliff. And then I can engage with the other skills and strategies that I have. But that first line is really just having the awareness and being able to step back from the experience so that I can do those things. And I'm honored to have Florina here and reacquainting myself with her story and getting into the nitty-gritty. We love talking about these kinds of internal works that help us move through life with a little more grace and a little more peace, a little more health. And yeah, we're talking about alignment of self and how that relates to pain.
And you know, something you mentioned, it's exactly what happens, right? There is pain and then comes the mind in. Mm-hmm. And the mind is like, oh, this is never going to get away, right? This will always be here. And then it will get worse. And it could be, let's say, cancer or whatever. It's just, that's the mind, right? It just hooks on and creates the story, right?
It's its job.
Yeah. And it goes to the most horrific scenarios. And that's actually, even when you look at pain research, about 80% of your pain is that mind story, right? Mm. So when you take it down and you can actually let go of that story and come really into this present moment, right? That's your practice, as you said, right? You come into the present moment and you're like, okay, curiosity, no mind story. Okay, how does that really feel? Like,
wow, what is it? Let go of the idea of pain. Just experience sensation. What is this, right? Get curious. Tune into what a different thing than running away from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is that that's where the healing starts. Awareness is your number one healer, period. And I think I had the luxury, it's a weird word to use for my path, but I really feel that way. I had the luxury that I constantly had these challenges, right? as a very, very young person, as a baby, you know, like that I couldn't really go there. There wasn't really an option.
Right. You couldn't not go there.
Like, I couldn't go into the mind story of like,
uh-huh. Oh, I see.
Oh, mm-hmm. This is going to stay for the rest of my life. Because it was constantly there, right? So mm-hmm. I think I must have really built very early an incredible trust into my body. An incredible trust of like, now it's like this. And let's see what I can do with this, right? And I think really that was this incredible gift. And that is something everybody can train. And that's where the practice comes in, right? And if you like to call it a spiritual practice, you can call it a body practice, call it what you like.
A mind practice.
A mind practice. Mm-hmm. Coming into that sensation and letting go of the belief of the pain and letting go of the future orientation of it and really deal with, now it's like this, right? That's where the change can happen. That's where the body kicks in and heals, not in you spinning out, right?
And so I wanted to say, like, now it's like this. I hear a lot of that acceptance piece and also dropping into the present moment, not into the future or in the past, which is then it comes back and circles back for me what I connect to what the Buddhist practices offer and what they focus on is that practice of what is here right now, the acceptance of it, and an understanding that things will always change, that they're not like this permanent state that always happens. And I just wanted to connect with you about, yes, you had this like natural understanding of pain from just having to have it so present from such an early age that it's something consistent. But and maybe you can speak to what the practice also offers and what you've learned for maybe let's touch on your Zen first and then move on to the Qigong after.
It is, again, it mind and body, right? How do we differentiate? Sometimes I have such a hard time doing that. The longer I'm here on this planet, the harder I have a time with separating the two. And just in order to kind of describe this a little bit, this practice, again, I would say it is a real, I'm just going back to that, you know, 20-80% of pain. When you look at pain, it's a belief. It's a struggle. It's a resistance, right, that we add to the pain. And that resistance is really 80% of your pain. And that goes for physical, mental, emotional. It doesn't matter, right? And Shinchen Yong, a meditation teacher, came up with this brilliant equation. It goes like this. Pain times resistance equals suffering. All right? Uh-huh. So you have pain, that's a 10. The pain you cannot change. That number 10, that is your number 10. That's a given. That's right now, it's like this. All right? Then you have all the control over the resistance. That is you creating resistance, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a resistance of 10. How big is your suffering? 100. 10 times 10 is 100. Okay.
Because of the resistance.
Because of the resistance, it becomes 100.
So it's like, oh, this happened because of this, or because of this person, or because of this choice, or this situation.
And often then it goes to, right, that self-blame. Mm-hmm. I did something wrong, mm-hmm. right?
It's going to be like this forever.
Yes. All of those things that come in, right? These fantasizing, and then it shouldn't be like this, right? Mm. That's such a big story. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be like this. Or we can go into poor me, right? This only happens to me all the time, right? Or we go into, I did something wrong, or this is, you know, we can even say, oh, this is karma that haunts me back. And, I mean, we can come up with the craziest stories in our head, right? Why we have a certain thing. What about it's just there? What about it's just there? You didn't do anything wrong. Life didn't do anything wrong. Really coming into that present of, wow, okay, this is what's true right now. Because it's here, right? So whatever is here is true. The story you put on top is not true. It's just your mind going a little crazy. All right. So let's just say the pain is still 10. Because that's not up to you to change mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. So then let's go radical. Your resistance is only 1. Your suffering is 10. 10 times 1 is 10. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's go really radical. You have no resistance. Your suffering is 0. Mm. Right? 10 times 10 zero times 0 is 0. It's a wonderful equation, isn't it? You as a math teacher could appreciate that. Go on,
for
Nona.
Sure, definitely.
So, but and it's so my experience. And I'm not saying that if you have pain and you suffer, you do something wrong. Again, no.
Yeah, sure.
No. However, this is the practice. Working with your resistance is the practice. Not trying to get away from pain. We got it so backwards, right? All our attempts to run away from what is not helping us. And that's where stop comes in. Slow down.
It yeah. totally reminds me. So Thich Nhat Hanh is one of my teachers. I do, you know, I've listened to him a lot and read his books and writings. And this reminds me of something he calls the second arrow. So, you know, we can't often help the first arrow, which is the whatever it is that life brings us and the experience of it. But that second arrow is your relationship to it, your thinking about it, your, you know, mulling over it, obsessing over something, or being stuck in a way of relating to that experience. And that second arrow is something that you do have control over, and that's where your agency is, and that's where your power lies. That's where you can, he says, don't let it fly. You know, you can learn to become skillful enough where you can do something about that aspect.
Yes, and I like that you say learn. It is, you know, one of the biggest things here is we need so much self-compassion on this path because it's not easy. You know, let's say when I started early on with 18, my meditation practice, because I started to realize, oh, okay, I had very early on very deep insights into the reality of nature. And then I still had this body and I was still fighting with this body. I mean, to really shake off my deep, deep anorexia I had took me 10 years. That was 10 years of deep practice. And I had to learn how to really, no matter how deep of insights or, you know, or all of these I had, there was still a struggle. And this is the path. It's not like, you know, you realize something and then you're good for the rest of your life. That's not how this works. It's a rewiring deep into your cells, and that does take time. And that is the whole idea of it, right? Mm-hmm. We want to hurry. We want to get somewhere. And the getting somewhere is over and over right here,
as it is. And then please add a lot of love, understanding, and just warmth to yourself with Absolutely. Whatever you deal with. You know, and I'm saying this really from a deep experience because I was fighting with myself. I was hard on myself, so hard for at least 2 decades until I finally realized, oh, I can add some self-compassion here. Wow. And that was one of the hardest challenges for me, you know. I was starting to go deep into practice, and then just to kind of give a whole picture of that path, then I became very curious when I started to build my nervous system and my body a little bit back, not fully, but it took me a long time, but a little bit. So I was able to go around people again. I started with a naturopathic school. Became a naturopathic doctor, and I specialized in body therapies, which was really my challenge, right? As trying to get out of my body, coming back into my body. So it was really a self-healing kind of journey. And I really connected deeply with shiatsu. I connected deeply with other physical therapies. And I did the whole like naturopathy, other things, you know, goes with it. Again, became as soon as I got my naturopathic doctor degree and my shiatsu diploma and some other ones, I left for a year into a monastery because that was really my longing, that I could just devote myself to my practice and just sit, literally. And so that's what I did. And I was very, very fortunate thankful to life showing me the right places. I was turned on to go to a monastery in Germany. And I didn't know the teacher by then. I was practicing with Japanese monks, Zen tradition. And I got turned on to, I wanted to first go to Japan. To immerse myself into a monastery. And somehow I was like, it's not my tradition. It's not my language. You know, how old was I? 24, 25 at that time. But I just knew I needed to sit. Like, I was sitting a lot. I was practicing a lot. But I needed to, like, just click out of the world and only sit, only meditate. So a good friend of my mom told me, oh, you might want to go check out this master in Germany. And I'm glad I did. It was Willigis Jäger. And he became my Zen master and later a very good friend of mine. And I went to his retreat center not knowing anything, not much anyway. And the deal was to stay for 3 months. That's how long they took people, you know, after an intro period. So anyway, I went there and it was funny because as soon as I walked into that place, I was like, oh, I'm home. I already know everything, where everything was. Like my soul was already there, like before I even arrived physically. I knew exactly when I walked into the Zendo, there was a big golden globe. I knew it all. It was the weirdest thing. I was like, whoa, this is bizarre. I've been here before. You know, that's when you know, oh yeah, I belong here. So anyway, it was really sweet. And what really worked for me about Willigis was I would describe him as a mystic. And he was trained actually in he's a Catholic priest in the Benedict tradition, and then went to Japan to study Zen with, you know, with the blessings of his church. Because he came from this order. Some of you probably out there know Thomas Merton, LaSalle. All these people, they were all very connected. That was that first generation of Christian trained priests who then went to Japan studying Zen, right? So he was right with them. He was a very close friend to them. And so anyway, so that really made sense to me because first of all, he spoke German. And, you know, I mean, growing up in Europe, you have that Christian background, a very old background from Christianity.
And so that kind of made sense to me. Yes. But the Zen tradition really made sense to me too. So anyway, so I was fortunate about that. And I, you know, did that whole year long with him and became part of his study group there and house group. And then that was just where I kept going back. You know, that was my definitely second home. And then after that period, I kept actually being called back. I was called back by a friend. She's like, hey, I got a job for you in Zurich in an AIDS hospital. Can you please? Nobody else can do this but you. So I'm like, okay, this is a calling back to the world, which I did then. And I did that part-time worked in an AIDS hospital in Zurich. And I also had my naturopathic doctor practice that I built up. And yeah, so that was that after that.
It's so interesting, this connection of Benedictine to the Zen. My dad grew up in a Zen, my grandfather was a Zen monk, but in high school, I was searching for the right place to be for my high school, and I ended up going to a small high school in the Bay Area that was founded by Benedictine monks. So I learned biology from Father Morris. He was amazing. And so I'm sitting there learning evolutionary biology from, you know, very religious person. And I learned a lot about Christianity by being there, because before then I was really, you know, my only connection to it was like learning that they promoted crusades and slavery and all that. And so I had a very negative perception of Christianity, and I know a lot of people have difficulty with that faith. But you know, going to that high school, I got to see the connections, you know, the interconnectedness of all the different world spiritualities from people who really connect to that for the right reasons and not for the power and the corruption, the human corruption. But anyways, I just realized now that your teacher was Benedictine, and that's pretty cool little thing. We are almost at the end of our show. You've been listening to Spiritual Perspectives, the Buddhist Perspectives, the odd fifth Sunday of the month. I'm here. I'm Nona, and I'm here with Florina Nigley, who is a local Soham practitioner. You can study Zen with her. She can be found at a lot of our local schools, sharing mindfulness practices with them, which are so important. I'm really thrilled that she's able to do that for our local community. It's such a service to help young minds be able to understand their own mental landscapes. So yeah, and we've been talking about her personal journey, and you know, our theme is how do people find their own personal spiritual pathways, and it's a big question, you know, and we can only see samples, but you had some ideas about that as we were talking, preparing for this show. Do you want to share on that note?
Yeah. I think, you know, connecting with one's inner longing, what is really important to you? What are you longing for? Deeply, right? More than just, I want a good breakfast or I want more money. But really, what is it? Yeah. What is that deep inner drive that I want it. I need it kind of thing on a very deep level. And to really connect with that is to slow down. You know, I think in our world, this is really the most important thing, is to slow down, to stop. And again, that takes courage, because then what are you meeting? Yourself. But ultimately, that's what you want to meet, right? And it's not as scary as we think. I think, you know, running away from things is actually more scary because mm-hmm. it uproots mm-hmm. you more and more and more.
Yeah.
So really that slowing down, that listening quality, and start little, you know, start small. Perhaps you already know what you want and you just have a hard time to get started. Then I would just say, well, commit to it, you know, whatever that is. If it's a early morning walk, if it's a 10-minute meditation, if it's a just not going on your phone first thing in the morning, whatever it is, we all know, right? What are some habits that are not fulfilling us and what are habits that are fulfilling us? And start there. Very simple, very practical. Expand on the things that fulfill you. And if you're not sure what that is, slow down. And slow down no matter what. So I would say there, you know, that's kind of like a good starting point. Because, you know, when I coach people on like finding their own ways, it's such an individual journey. And on that individual journey, it is helpful to find a teacher. It really is. And to find a sangha, too, like which means a community, right? Because alone, again, we can get very confused because of our mind, right? Because of our conditioning. We can get very confused. Am I doing this right? I'm probably not doing this right. I can't meditate. I don't know anybody out there who's tried to meditate. It's like, I can't do this. Like, yes, you can. You just, like, the idea of how to is the question, right? The idea that your mind is going to stop when you physically stop is an illusion. Just knowing that firsthand is really important. And then the question, okay, what can you do, right, with that chatter mind? How can you be with it? What's the relationship to it? So these kind of things, that's where the teacher comes in, right? Somebody who has gone down, you know, some of that path before and who had a good teacher before and that kind of thing. That's just kind of a guidepost. I guess that's kind of, again, a very individual question, how to find that. I would say, yeah, those are kind of some things that come to my mind.
Yeah, and it's part of it. I was thinking earlier when we were talking about pain also is that if you don't have the felt experience of something different, something other, something that's inspiring or something to seek, then it's more difficult to engage in that practice too because you just think that this is it, you know, in some ways.
And then perhaps it's not needed. Perhaps it's not time for you. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm.
That's where you were at.
That's where you're at. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, again, this is why. It's that inner longing. Not everybody needs to go into a monastery and meditate for a year. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, follow that what's right for you.
Like you said, it could be a walk in the woods. It could be listening to some your favorite album.
Yeah. And the whole idea is to really become more of who you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all come at a certain time of our lives into that position of like, whoa, I'm struggling. No matter what that is, doesn't need to be physical. I mean, eventually we all physically struggle, right, when we get really old or semi-old. So that's a reality. But also we all know, you know, emotional struggles, mental struggles. We all know that. Mm-hmm. There is not one human I met that this is just like easy sailing out there. Yeah. Question is how to limit, like, yeah, how to align with that.
Yeah. And to reduce suffering, if that's what you're looking for. You know, there's certain practices that are out there that's the focus and that's the offering. And so I want to provide that and give people opportunity for that. And if that's what you were looking for. So, yeah, we're coming to the end of the show. And Florina, it's been lovely talking to you. Time just flies when talking about these things. Will you share with our listening audience about where they can find you, how might they might be able to connect, your offerings for the community?
It's been a lot. Well, the easiest way how to kind of connect is just go on my website. That is, my name is a little interesting because it's a Swiss name. It's florinanickley.com. So that's F-L-U-R-I-N-A NIGGLI.com. You could also just literally Google bodywork Garberville. You could Google, what can you Google? Meditation Garberville. I'm probably popping up. So that's the way, one of the ways you can find find me with my contact information. Yeah, reach out if you have questions.
You have Wednesday meditation
and groups. Then I have Wednesday evening from 5 to 6:30, a free group that's Essence of Life Sangha Meditation. And everybody is really welcome there. You know, it's, you don't have to be from a certain tradition. The way I teach is very open for everybody. And my goal is that you find a practice that works for you. And it is great to come together. It's really, really important to sit together, to hold each other's space. It makes a huge difference. If you have a hard time creating your own practice at home, please join a group. It really makes the difference, that commitment of just getting you going and having a little bit of guidance. So again, if you're curious about that, reach out to me. I also teach a Friday morning Qigong class from 10:30 to 12. Anyway, that's, you can reach out for me to that, about that. Mindful Mud is happening second Sunday, 9:30 to 10:30. My next show is in 2 weeks. I actually have Justine Willis-Toms on. You
oh
all know
goodness.
Her.
What?
I will have her on in 2 weeks.
That is so exciting.
Yeah, she is the host from New Dimensions.
Wow.
And she will have a conversation with me
oh
in
my
2 weeks.
Gosh.
Yeah,
definitely
so tune into that.
Tune into
yeah.
that. That's great.
So that's going to be great. And it's a podcast too, Mindful Mud. Go check out Mindful Mud with Fluvino Nickley on your podcast app. So there's some great episodes up there.
Perfect. Yeah, the podcast
what else?
Great.
Yeah.
I get to download it. And, you know, even if I don't have internet on my drive to work and whatnot, I get to listen.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're out of time.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much, Florina. I appreciate you coming in and sharing your story, sharing your personal journey, and kind of letting everyone know that it's possible, you know. So
this has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.